Hello, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, college football fans across the nation and around the world. Man, the focus is going to be on Columbus, Ohio, this weekend. And boy, is the focus on the Ohio State football team right now, especially after news that Seth McLaughlin, Ohio State's really sterling starting center who transferred in from Alabama, looks like he's lost for the season to what apparently was an Achilles tendon injury of some sort. But I bring in my friend, cohort, co-pilot, whatever you want to call him, Matt Wilhelm. Matt Wilhelm, welcome back to the Tim May Show. You're here every week, and let's just jump right into it, Matt. When you heard about this news, and by the way, I have a nice conversation with Adam Rittenberg, who covers the Big Ten in the national scene for ESPN. We taped that before the news of the Seth McLaughlin injury, so don't let that stand in the way of anything. But Matt, when you heard the news on Tuesday that that Ohio State it apparently has lost its center Seth McLaughlin for the season, what was your first reaction?
Well, I mean, there were some expletives for sure associated with hearing that news for the first time. But the WTF jumps to mind with keeping it kind of PG or PG-13 so people can read between the lines.
I know. I got your text message. Go ahead now.
Exactly. And so much of it has to do with any starter. You get a WTF, especially in the middle of a week with a game of prominence like we have ahead of us this Saturday. But in some cases, you figure, as we kind of talked before we jumped on it, it's not the quarterback, which is I guess the leader of the offense, right? But the center, in many cases, and in this case, for a guy as experienced as Seth was, he's the leader of that offensive line. And I think while some pundits may have thought he got off to a little bit of a slow start, kind of settling in. But there was some reshuffling along that offensive line. The last 5 or 6 weeks, many folks are pegging him to be on an All-American list of some sort, whether that's first team, second team, or honorable mention, which makes him probably a top five center in the entire country. And it's a blow. It's definitely a blow. And then, but I'll be honest, like the WTF was my first reaction. And again, I sent that out to, a few of my buddies, yourself included, that are, very much tuned in to everything Ohio State. But then, as time went on, I kind of went, well, we're Ohio State, and for a school like Ohio State, who recruits a top five class each and every year. And you've got what we believe are some of the best coaches in the country and their ability to develop. Their ability to pivot with these immensely talented players. While there will be some drop off, and I think there absolutely will be some change, I'm going to be very interested to see, what the shuffling looks like, because I think they do have some options with his Hinsman potentially going back to center, or him staying at guard where he's kind of settled in and been very good the last couple of
Yes.
weeks, and or go back to, some sort of unproven individuals that locks in guard tackles on both sides and allows you to like kind of reinsert a center that maybe we haven't seen that much or played a lot of football, but and who knows, maybe some of the line calls will not fall on the center anymore the way that Seth has been making them for the line, and it falls on one of the guards who's been playing and in flow and kind of understands the game plan a little bit more in depth because they've been in these game situations.
Yeah. Bottom line is, we're not sure what to expect as you and I record this on Wednesday morning of Indiana week, as I guess you would call it, showdown week. Who saw that one coming? We'll get into that in a minute. But there are several ways the Buckeyes can go. I mean, my friend Spencer Holbrook on LettermanRow.com speculated that, they could just go ahead and elevate Josh Padilla. They're talented but young. Backup center or center in waiting up to the spot and run with it, because their idea, and the Ohio State's idea is this is game 11 of what they hope to be at least a 16 game season. And it is just past the halfway point, so to speak. But the bottom line is it's go with what you think you're going to be playing with 2 or 3, 4 weeks from now, not just on Saturday. That's easier said than done, right? Because
It is.
if there's a position you like having experience at, it's the center position. And this is a
Sure.
guy, Seth McLaughlin, who played in a national championship semifinal last year for Alabama, started the last two seasons for Alabama. You know, you don't just reach into your cupboard, no matter who, what
No.
school you are, and pull a guy like him out. So
Of course.
how will this affect them, do you think, even if they moved Carson Hinsman back over, where he started all 12 games last year at center for Ohio State? How will this affect them short term? I mean, would they be prone to, like, kind of like simplify a few things? How would they do that, do you
That's a
think?
great question. Great question. And I would not have been surprised that if Chip Kelly, Justin Fry, and Ryan Day, probably those core three individuals, and maybe the entire offensive staff, after the injury was kind of pronounced and kind of confirmed, you know, in the evening, that they weren't on some type of Zoom or Teams call or a conference call last evening, kind of talking through this, or again, for that matter, just even in the office, right? You know, putting in those extra hours and, you know, burn the candle at both ends, right? And then also waking up and getting in super early this morning and jumping on a whiteboard. And truthfully, Tim, working through a lot of the things you just talked about is, how much internal pressure are you going to see from this week's opponent, you know, in Indiana? Or is there strength more on the edges? And then you start talking protections. You start talking, you know, run game blocking schemes. And it's not what player can he do them or can he not. What's he best at, or whatever player they reinsert, you know? And I want to say, and also, I would also say, like, what are the limiting factors of each individual, you know, because they all have their strengths and they have some weaknesses. And again, if Hinsman goes to center, it's him kind of getting back into the groove there, and Shreefold, you know, moving back into guard and him getting comfortable at left guard, where he's got a couple of starts there.
Sirveld. Yeah.
Sirveld. Sirveld. Yeah.
That's all right.
And their names are all a little funky.
Yeah. Hey, just don't call him late to the starting lineup. Go ahead now.
Exactly. Is it's like, where's the drop off, and what gives us the best, you know, ability to, again, maintain the time and effort they've put into constructing the game plan to go attack Indiana, right? Because the one thing you don't want to do is get defensive or get passive and start whacking plays. Again, I go back to, we are Ohio State, right? That player that's stepping in is accomplished and is credible, not as credible and accomplished as Seth McLaughlin. So there's going to be some drop off from a leadership, from a communication standpoint, and obviously from a game flow standpoint, because he's played 30 plus odd, you know, college football games at an extremely high level.
Yeah.
So you're going to have some drop off, but how do you minimize that for the sake of maintaining how you want to go about, you know, blocking and protecting against this Indiana front?
Yeah, and it's interesting. I wrote a story for LettermanRow.com earlier this week, coming out of that game at Wrigley Field against Northwestern. It was actually an Ohio State home game, as it turned out, from a crowd standpoint. But it was basically quoting Seth McLaughlin about how this Ohio State has it had this momentum coming out of that game, because it ended up rushing for, what, 175 yards against what was then going in the number 16 rush defense in the country.
Yeah.
And that's saying something, because they just kept leaning. They just kept cracking on Northwestern until finally they kind of cracked that front wall, which the Northwestern rush defense was for real. And, but boy, so is the Ohio State offensive line. And now they're going against what the number one, number two rush defense in the country statistically in Indiana. Yep. Indiana's licking his chops. You played on defense. You were a stellar middle linebacker for the 2002 Ohio State National Championship team, which went undefeated. And the reason I'm bringing that up is, if you're on the defensive side of the ball and you see the other team's starting center is gone, they've got a new guy in there, no matter who it is, are you licking your chops? What are you doing?
To a certain extent, yes. I do think for both sides, and again, every injury is unfortunate, but it's early enough in the week for you to be able to pivot and for you to, you know, anticipate some things. And that's on the Ohio State side, that you can get all Wednesday, all Thursdays, your heavy work days, you know, and then, you know, like the walkthrough, the best Fridays in football, as we see all over social media on Fridays, and get the whomever or whatever, you know, run down along the offensive line, that synergy together for a couple of days, which are heavy work days. And on the flip side, Indiana has already also constructed some type of game plan based on their film study and how they want to play and or attack. the offensive front in run games, stopping the run, and in pass games, getting after Ohio State's protections or attacking a specific individual. I would not be surprised, and this is completely speculative, going back to your question about what would a defense player, I wouldn't be surprised if we do a little bit more. There's a little bit more, you know, maybe a gap mugging, or they're, they put a player, you know, maybe go, put a zero or a one technique over the center to force him to snap the ball accurately with a junkyard dog lined up right over his head and handle him throughout a game. And on the flip side, though, then Ohio State, if they see that and also anticipate it, that three down front, what type of guard help, you know, is he going to be getting? That's whomever the center is going to be, what type of guard help and where is it coming from, and getting that timing down throughout the week. So there's going to be a little bit of, again, every week we talked heavyweight, you know, a heavyweight boxing match, but then also turned it into like a little bit of the chess match, right? Of feeling each other out and getting a flow for how they're playing us in coverage. You know, are they blitzing? Are they, you know, are they just playing their down front rushing four, dropping seven? And so on. So there's going to be some push and pull. And I, again, every injury is super unfortunate, but I do think for Ohio State, this happening on a Tuesday, not a Thursday, allows them to get an Ohio State scholarship football player, which means something across this country as a recruit, ready to play a football game in 4 days.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting no matter what. And I bring this up. You guys had a star running back by the name of Maurice Clarett. I don't know if you remember him or not.
I do. I know you did.
You know, he's actually been hanging out with the Ohio State football team of late. And,
which is welcomed, awesome.
Welcomed by Ryan Day, which is really funny because he was kind of ripping on Ryan Day a year ago. But
everybody
life.
Everybody needs a good ripping every once in a while, right?
Yeah. Yeah. A good ripping now and then is relished by the best of men. I got you. But my point is, he established himself from the first game as a star, as basically the star on the offense. And then all of a sudden, he has to miss a game because of arthroscopic knee surgery. I'm talking about the game at Cincinnati, which you guys figured out a way to win anyway. I don't know if you remember that game or not.
I do.
I don't know if you remember the end of that game or not. You played quite a role.
Good pass. Yes, sir.
But y'all kept figuring out ways to win games. Y'all, it wasn't like you were running over people. And Maurice was never really the same after the surgery.
And then there was the shoulder injury later in the season as well.
Three fumbles at Northwestern.
Correct.
Right on down a lot. But he did score the winning touchdown in the national championship game, but not against Michigan. Maurice Hall scored a winning touchdown against Michigan. My point is, life went on. Y'all figured out a way. This was one of your stars on offense, but really, Craig Krenzel, right on down the line, guys stepped up, you know, in the receiver game.
Yeah.
So life is not over, is my point, right?
Yeah, gosh, no. I mean, and again, going back to that season, you know, Lydell Ross and Maurice Hall kind of picked up the slack as a tandem, replacing Maurice Clarett in those certain situations. And then, just like always, you know, Maurice, even if you ask him, was probably never 100% after the knee surgery and then the shoulder thing. He was always just banged up. And so therefore you got a little dabble of those other guys throughout the football season. It goes back to my, kind of like my opening point is the backups at Ohio State can start many other places, but they've chose to be a Buckeye for a specific reason in the battle to get action, you know, in these football games, these big football games is why you go to Ohio State. And, whomever is going to not shy away from this opportunity to step up in this role. It is, you know, and here's what we'll have to say as well. Like whatever combination we roll out, as much as we'd love to say, we've got seven more games to play or whatever it might be. And this is the combination we're going to roll with it. Whatever we're going to roll out might look great in practice. You roll it out against Indiana. It might be survivable. You hope.
Yeah.
And then you still tinker next week ahead of the game, you know, and then in hopes you play yourself into a situation by winning the Big Ten championship and then you get a week off. And it's like, it's really the tinkering's never done. You hope you fall into what fits and what works, but that's sometimes not the case. But when you have talented football players and you have, you know, great evaluators and great coaches that develop these young men to be ready for this situation, not shy away from it. Again, there will be drop-off. To a certain extent, you know, as I mentioned, from a leadership standpoint, from a continuity standpoint, from a communication standpoint, and I'll say also player performance, because Seth's been playing very, very well. But how do you overcome that? And for Chip Kelly and Justin Fry and Ryan Day, this isn't their first rodeo of losing a player at some juncture in a football season and having to step up and motivate and tinker little things, you know, with scheme and pass protection and roll out an amazing product, which I expect from these Buckeyes.
Yeah. I mean, almost every Ohio State national championship team has had to weather storms. And 2014, Ohio State loses Braxton Miller 2 weeks before the season opens with a shoulder injury. JT Barrett leads them almost like Moses leads them almost to the promised land. And then, boom, he gets hurt against Michigan. And lo and behold, Cardale Jones, whom Urban Meyer continues to say, if you're going to build a statue to somebody, probably Cardale Jones from that season, the way he stepped in. We're talking about quarterback, ladies and gentlemen.
Right.
It can be done. It has been done. You've lost key players and moved on. One last thing. How much can like a Donovan Jackson out at left tackle, even Carson Hinsman, who started 12 games at center last year, if he stays at left guard and they do go, for example, the Josh Padilla route and then Tegra Shibola, who started every game this year at right guard and then Josh Fryer at right tackle. How much can they help the center? You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, they can help a lot. To answer your question. Now it's not going to be what you're going to do is you're going to basically going to be maybe a little bit more zone blocking, a little bit more turn protection, you know, if that marries up with some of the looks that Indiana gives you. So I think, you know, without studying Indiana's defense, you know, really, really in depth and the way they, you know, they've played, I know they're statistically how they played all year, but not the actual X's and O's.
Yeah.
And you want to find the best combination to like not leave whomever, if that's Padilla, on an island by himself with, you know, with a nose or a two tech or a one tech by himself. So he's going to get some, you know, some guard hand help, you know, kind of like as an early double before the guard then fans back out to go to pick up a blitzing backer, if that's the case.
Yeah.
To just buy him time to not be by himself. And here's the other thing that I'll say is I wouldn't be surprised if that might be the early game flow of giving him some help, probably being a little bit like safer in our protections. And then as the game goes on and Padilla or whomever, or Hinsman, you know, back at center really settles in and shows the moment and this like, you know, abrupt change isn't too big for this young man, that he can handle whomever he's playing against and the moment of stepping up in this big game, then they can kind of ease their way back into maybe some of the looks that they were getting with Seth, who can be on an island and handle, you know, a 320-pound nose bull rush, you know, right in front of the quarterback and still operate the offense very efficiently.
Yeah. And by the way, you know, we're just speculating here because, you know, the last time this happened, which is only a few games ago, Ryan Day and his staff opted to go with experience. And that was moving Carson Hinsman into left guard at Penn State. A guy who had started 12 games for you last year, got in the doghouse for whatever reason. Well, we kind of know the reason, but is that a reason to stay in the doghouse? I'm not sure. But the bottom line is, you know, they had played Austin Saraville in place of Donovan Jackson the first several games of the season. This is a, you know, this is an offensive line that has proved to be malleable. I mean, here's Ohio State sitting here, 9-1. And on the threshold of possibly playing for the Big Ten championship and then moving on. But they went with experience in that regard. So it wouldn't surprise me what they do at that spot, maybe moving Hinsman to center and Saraville back in there because he's played and played at a pretty damn good level as the season went on. But like you said, whatever it is, it's going to be a switch up. And the other thing is, I hasten to tell people this, you know, there's no silver lining in terms of Seth McLaughlin in this situation. The silver lining in terms of what of him and his own personal situation, but the one silver lining is this didn't happen in the first quarter against Indiana on Saturday. And they do have time, and these guys have been going to practice. They have been getting their reps, et cetera. So we'll see where it goes. Hey, let me ask you one last thing.
Sure.
For the quarterback, what can the quarterback do? Because he's standing back there getting the shotgun snaps or sometimes getting under center. Would it behoove them to get more under center in a situation like this or just stay with what you do?
Not necessarily. And so much of it has to do with, today's, call it high school and college landscape where everybody, for the most part, unless you're running some, you know, aspect of the veer, or triple option at the high school level, most quarterbacks and or centers have been shotgun snapping for their entire high school career. From these recruits, all they know is shotgun snaps. And if anything is foreign, it's probably an under center snap. So I think it's business as usual. It's and like I said, it's calls have been made amongst the coaches. I wouldn't be surprised if a decision has been made on what that rotation or whomever's going to at least tinker with first that role and see what it looks like today. The one thing I think that could be a little bit of a trap, it's like you can't, you know, because it is Wednesday of a big game week, you can't go, well, let's roll with this combination. Oh, that looks like crap. Tomorrow we're going to go with that combination.
Yeah.
You know, it's whatever executive decision gets made collaboratively amongst, as I said, probably Ryan Day, Chip Kelly, and Justin Fry. And they make that phone call to the young man of like, hey, it's going to be you and so-and-so is going to be here and we're going to do this. We're going to, you know, and like kind of like talk through it all. And then that young man's got to perform. You kind of have to stick with it because, again, it is, again, Wednesday, not mid-second quarter where someone's just got to come in and you just got to roll. But you would love to get, call it 50 quality snaps today together as a unit, along with, you know, Will Howard at quarterback. And then same as tomorrow. And then it's probably going to be cut in half, 30 to 40, and, you know, jog through, walk through tempo on a Friday. But those reps matter. That's the feel and the confidence of this young man and the confidence of Will Howard and the two guards playing next to him, having this young man. It's like, and again, they're going to be building him up and not some false bravado, but just like, hey, dude, let's roll. That's why you're here. You know, once you make your decision, I think you got to make your decision and roll with it. And then roll it out there, you know, in the game with this maybe slightly adjusted game plan to protect him early. Maybe run the ball, quick passes is probably what I would say as well. Get the ball out of Will Howard's hand strategically versus what Indiana's going to give us. And then let the flow of the game kind of naturally broaden the game plan and allow you to go back to the way to business as usual, operating as an offense when Seth was likely in there.
You know what's funny? Real quick before we move on to my conversation with Adam Rittenberg, and we'll come back and wrap up some things. Mainly, we're going to talk about just real quick this matchup with Kurt Cignetti in Indiana. You talk about a revamp. crazy what they've done in this first season. No other word for it. But I always tell people, I mean, I watch football games from the inside out. I mean, almost always. I always watch what's going on in the line and then spread my vision from there. Because that's the telltale sign. Now, all of a sudden, I think everybody in Buckeye Nation will be watching it from the same lens, right? I mean, is he holding up? How are they holding up around him? It's funny how it brings focus back to what really matters in big-time football. When you go through a tailgate, you know, before the game, everybody's throwing the football around. That's the end result, you know?
Yeah.
What separates football from the tailgate is what's going on in the trench. And it will bring attention once again back to that area, right?
It definitely will. And I think, you know, for those who don't want to stare at the offensive line, I would say if you just still follow the football and just watched Will Howard, how panicked or is the tempo sped up of Will Howard getting rid of the football? Does he have bodies, you know, in and around him? Is he getting hit after a throw? Is he getting knocked down? Does he have bodies kind of like flashing in front of him as he's delivering the football? Doesn't necessarily mean it's sacks.
Yeah.
You know, but are there bodies winning in his face that is kind of keeping him off his rhythm, right?
Yes.
That by itself is the direct result of something's just not meshing right up front. That they've got to work through. And that's that, you know, that could very well be the first drive and then maybe a little bit less in the second drive. And then drive three, it's all married up and you don't see those bodies around Will Howard. And that's, again, high paid coaches at the number two school in the country who spend thousands of hours with these young men, developing them in the weight room and on the football field to go out and do their job, these 16, 12, 14 opportunities the best they can. And again, injuries happen. It's super unfortunate, but I would say, that's the best way for the novice fan who wants to follow the football and just wants to see pitch and catch. When it's not pitch and catch and Will Howard is maneuvering in the pocket or kind of, I don't say running for his life, because that's just means it's like, you know, poop through a tin horn up front is, but it's just not synergistic the way that we've become accustomed to this offense operating is probably a little to do with those guys working through what's going on up front.
Well, hey, that's great. I mean, well put. Let's get real quick to my conversation with Adam Rittenberg from ESPN, and then we'll come back, Matt, and we'll talk a little bit about Cincinnati, and then and get moving with our day. But ladies and gentlemen, here's my conversation with Adam Rittenberg of ESPN. Oh my goodness, I am honored to be joined by Adam Rittenberg. I've talked about you already, Adam, here on the introduction, but you and I are sitting there, we're talking at the Big Ten meetings back in July and about what's expected from Ohio State, and here's Oregon coming in, and what's Michigan gonna be about, especially when the probation hits, right on down the line. And we were very curious about Kurt Cignetti and his incredibly confident stride to the podium and the speech he gave and everything else, and just almost, literally a breath of fresh air, right? And but who saw this coming? Ohio State, Indiana undefeated, number five in the country, after the last several years, against Ohio State, number two in the country, one loss to number one Oregon by 1 point. The three domos of the Big Ten plus Penn State, four teams in the top five. But Indiana, Adam, did you have Indiana doing this?
Certainly not this, Tim. It's great to be with you too. I thought this would be a better team. I knew about Kurt Cignetti and his career and the fact that he had been so successful at multiple levels of the sport. And I thought with the transfers that they brought in that they certainly would have a chance to get back to a bowl game or to just kind of stabilize things. But yeah, who could have seen 10-0 coming? Schools never won 10 games in a season, much less start a season with 10 straight victories. And certainly the schedule, we'll talk about that. It didn't work out in their favor in terms of marquee matchups, but you have to play who's on the schedule. And until the second half against Michigan, Indiana was beating everybody soundly. They were winning all their games by 14 points or more. A lot of those games were, pretty much over in the third quarter. And so, this is a team that has a lot going for it, and a team that shouldn't be taken lightly, by Ohio State, even though Ohio State's played a tougher schedule and has better talent, on both sides of the ball. So, yeah, I think part of it again with Indiana is you have a coach who knew how to win, but then also could inspire a locker room and really beyond that, Tim, a community. This is a part of the reason why Indiana's down. I'm a firm believer in this. When your fan base doesn't believe, when people really don't think you can get over that hump externally, it does impact what happens on the field. And that whole mindset has changed. And that's why Kurtz really did what he did and said what he said, because he wanted to increase the mood and the confidence level, not just within the locker room, but around the entire program. And he's certainly done that.
Yeah, he did sort of a Ronald Reagan, remember Jimmy Carter said we were in a great malaise, remember, as a nation? And then Ronald Reagan came in and said, "The hell with that," you know what I'm talking about. I'm not getting into politics here, but it's like there's nothing. I've always said this, Adam. There's nothing like having a coach, bringing in a coach who clearly has a plan to win, like Jim Tressel did when he showed up at Ohio State. But he didn't do things as quickly as Kurt Cignetti did. But the players Kurt Cignetti brought in, obviously they were very busy in the transfer portal. But a lot of these guys, James Madison guys and things like that, but they're guys who could relate to their head coach because they had been with him for a while. And then you bring in the Elson kid, the running back from Wake Forest, and just dabbled. You bring in a quarterback from Ohio U, and he's your salvation. You know what I mean? I mean, they were really good at picking out who they brought in, and we know they're not working with an NIL budget anywhere close to the big biggies, including Ohio State. But they really did a good job of bringing in the right personnel, right?
No, they did. And I think, you talk to Kurt, and I have multiple times, he credits, the players they brought in from JMU, but also the coaches. I mean, seven staff members from James Madison, the both coordinators, a strength coach. And so they, it wasn't just him saying what needed to change or what the program is going to be about. You had those coaches and those players that were reinforcing it. And you look at a number of their top players on defense are transfers, many of whom are from JMU. You look at the defensive lineman Kamara and linebacker Aiden Fisher, Jalen Walker, and then the back end, Pons is one of the JMU transfers. So they have really, helped usher in this new era of Indiana. But then they also evaluated, other players who they felt could really help them right away. And Curtis Rourke is a guy who was on the NFL radar, got hurt, still was really productive, and was moving up to some program at the Power Four level. And Indiana was the one that ended up closing the deal, and they've certainly benefited from him. So yeah, it's an impressive roster flip in year one. I mean, that's what really jumps out to me, Tim. A couple things is they were able to do this the first year, and they lead the nation in rush defense.
I
And
know.
again, I just don't you don't see that in a league like the Big Ten with a new staff, and a place like Indiana. You just don't expect that. So it's really impressive. I don't know what's going to happen Saturday, but I think no matter what, this Indiana program's turning a corner.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you this, though. You've been around Cignetti, obviously, a heck of a lot more than I have, or at least you got to talk to him and things like that. But I know we can Google him, but just from your interaction with him, what stands out the most about him? I mean, like I said, he has a plan, but a lot of people have plans, as the old Mike Tyson line was, until you get hit in the mouth, right? But I mean, what is it that just jumps out to you personally about him that's made this an extremely fast, effective fit?
I do think that Indiana needed somebody who had won before at a lot of levels. I think they needed somebody who could certainly evaluate offense and quarterbacks and get that unit on the right track. I think he's a guy that grew up around the sport, Tim. I mean, he was his dad was a Hall of Fame coach. He worked for Nick Saban. Nick Saban was on his father's staff at West Virginia as a defensive backs coach when Kurt was in high school. And then he goes out and works for Johnny Majors at Pitt and other coaches. And so he's been around, a lot. He understands what it takes to win at the highest level of the sport. He has just spent most of his head coaching career at different levels: Indiana University, Pennsylvania, Elon College, then James Madison. And he hasn't really had this opportunity before. So I'm just, I, you know, you've seen this around the country. I mean, look at Kalen DeBoer. I met Kalen when he was the offensive coordinator at Eastern Michigan less than a decade ago. And now he's the head coach at Alabama. These guys at the lower levels really do know what they're doing. Chris Klieman at Kansas State is another one. Lance Leipold. They shouldn't be taken lightly. So I think it was a really smart hire by Scott Dolson, the athletic director at Indiana. He knew what he wanted. And Kurt really checked a lot of those boxes. But again, it's one thing to express the confidence the way he has. It's another thing to come off as authentic and then have other people buy into it. If people thought he was a fraud, they wouldn't be sitting here at 10-0. It just doesn't add up. So the fact is, his message, whether you liked it or not, and he knows some people didn't like it, it worked for the people it mattered for Indiana, and that's why they're sitting here in this position.
You and I are recording this before the new college football playoff rankings come out, but I want to get this in with you before we wrap this up. This has been a Forget about the fact it's the first ever, going to be the first ever 12-team playoff, Adam. This has been a wacky football season, hadn't it? I mean, when you look at the SEC and the two-loss group in the SEC, and you look at Colorado making a move, I mean, we'll see what happens. You understand what I'm saying? And the going away of the Pac-12, and yet Oregon stepping up in the Big Ten, and as we speak, still undefeated, number one in the country. I mean, this has been a season for the books, even before they play the 12-team playoff, hadn't it?
No doubt. It's been one of the most unpredictable and exciting seasons that I can remember, Tim. And maybe Indiana's been the story in the Big Ten, but certainly the SEC with all those teams, at or near the top and trying to figure, I was asking Steve Sarkisian earlier today, who's the best team in the SEC? I talked to someone at Alabama, who's the best? It's really hard to figure out. And that makes it really exciting because obviously a number of those teams are going to be in the college football playoff, and we're going to find out just which one of them is capable of winning a national championship. Then you have the Big 12, and you mentioned it. I mean, this week we have Colorado and Arizona, or sorry, Colorado and Arizona State both playing. If they both win out, they're going to play for the Big 12 title. Going into the year, Colorado was picked 11th in the conference. Arizona State was picked dead last, 16th,
And
with Blaine
Utah.
Dillingham. He's just done a phenomenal. Utah was first, and they've fallen off. BYU's another team right in the mix there for the Big 12. They were, I think, picked somewhere in the teens for that conference. So that's been really exciting. And then this year, one of the big takeaways for me is that I was always of the mindset that teams take a while to acclimate in a new conference, that you don't win right away. Here's Oregon sitting there undefeated. SMU is undefeated in the ACC. Arizona State and Colorado are both newcomers into the Big 12. So, yeah, Texas, obviously new in the SEC. So I think that that has kind of gone out the window, that sort of acclimation period in it for a new team in a new league. These guys are showing you can get it done right away.
Yeah. And hey, leading that pack, Kurt Cignetti, head coach of Indiana. Last thing I wanted to ask you, if it's a close game, let's say Ohio State wins on Saturday. If it's a close game, you'll have three 1-loss teams in the Big Ten before the Big Ten championship game. Good chance you'll have that, right? Are you of the mindset like Heather Dinich and others? Well, I'm not sure what she said lately, but is there a chance that the Big Ten hosts three of the four, whatever you want to call it, first round games with Penn State, obviously Indiana, and maybe the loser of Ohio State Oregon rematch, if in fact that happens? Because I wouldn't think Ohio State would drop that far if in fact it was to lose again. Maybe I'm wrong, but what's your that's incredible too, isn't it, to think that could be the case?
No doubt. Yeah, I think it's I would be a little surprised at this point, Tim, if the Big Ten doesn't have two of the playoff games on home sites. You know, the 8-9 margin will be really interesting. I mean, you look at if a team can in the SEC can just have a resume that dwarfs, Penn State's an interesting candidate, right? Because they
Yes.
have okay wins, don't have great wins. They were competitive against Ohio State, but ultimately lost, didn't score a offensive touchdown at home. How are you going to evaluate them against a Georgia or an Alabama if those teams don't win the SEC? Those teams have played tougher schedules. They have better wins. Maybe they have, in Alabama's case, a loss that jumps out a little bit to Vanderbilt. But I would start thinking about moving them ahead of Penn State or maybe even Indiana if Indiana loses somewhat definitively against Ohio State. So yeah, I think the shuffling of who's at home and who's at the on the road is going to be really interesting. But I think between, the Big Ten championship loser, Ohio State, or sorry, Indiana, if they do lose to Ohio State, the Ohio State Indiana loser and Penn State, you should probably have two teams hosting on that first weekend.
Yeah, it is crazy. Ohio State's the only one of those four that's played the other th will have played the other three. I mean, and
Right.
maybe, yeah, and maybe one of them twice. I mean, that's pretty crazy. Hey,
Yeah, I
Adam.
mean it's more like what you've seen in the SEC with Georgia and Alabama. Those two teams have played, and Tennessee too. They've played a challenging schedule, but I mean Georgia's schedule, it's right there with Ohio State. I mean that Ohio State's played the version that Georgia has played in the Big Ten, and nobody else has really played anything like that. Oregon, has had some tough games on paper, but shoot, beating Michigan on the road this year, beating Wisconsin's not the same as it usually is. So it's just again, like you said, a very odd year, but an entertaining one.
Absolutely. Hey, I owe it all to transfer portal. I don't know about you, but transfer portal, NIL is everybody's got players now for the most part, right?
No
And if
doubt.
you're
I mean, again, without the transfer portal, there's no way that Indiana is sitting here at 10-0. I mean, if Kurt couldn't have brought those guys that we talked about, if he couldn't have brought in Curtis Rourke, now Curtis was a graduate, so maybe that would have been easier. But it really does allow, if you have that support, and they clearly have it now, as his new contract reinforced, you can change the trajectory of your program very, very quickly if you make the right decision. So it should be inspiring for other programs that maybe have been in a similar position as Indiana.
Yeah, and you know what? Hey, real quick, I wanted to add one last thing. It shows in these times, if you hire the right man with the right plan at the right time, you can make it happen now. There's really no excuses for these people who aren't, right? I mean, this is a great glaring example.
No, for sure. I think that if you're a school that isn't, in that transfer market or kind of waffling whether you should go in or not or needs to improve your NIL product, I think a lot of people will point to Indiana. They'll point to Ole Miss. I mean, Ole Miss is probably going to make the playoff largely because they flipped their not flipped their roster but enhanced their roster through significant transfer additions. I mean, they lose Quinshon Judkins to Ohio State, but look at who they added. Look at who they brought in, especially for the defense. And now Ole Miss is sitting there with a chance to make the playoff for the first time. I mean, that's what I really wanted, Tim. I mean, I'm not the biggest fan of some of the effects of the portal, but what I wanted in the sport was more opportunity for different teams. It's very difficult, I think, long term to have a sport where the postseason is so exclusive and only a few teams can make it. Now we have more, teams in that mix, and I we're sitting here in mid-November with all these different possibilities. That wouldn't have happened without the expanded playoff, wouldn't have happened without the portal and NIL, and overall, that's a net positive for the sport.
Hey, go ahead and ask me. Knock, knock.
Knock, knock.
No, you knock. You go knock. I'm gonna go knock, knock. You
Okay,
ask.
who's
Knock,
there?
knock.
Who's
Sorry.
there?
Everybody,
Yeah.
let me into the playoff. Hey, Adam, man, I really enjoyed this. I knew I would, man. I'm gonna have you on a few more times if you don't mind, man, because you're one of my favorite guys. We just never get to hook up in the regular way, but you do yeoman's work, baby, for ESPN. Thanks for joining me, man.
You're the best, Tim. Thanks for having me, man.
Hey, no matter how you slice it, Matt Wilhelm, Kurt Cignetti has done a, and his staff, I mean, his staff is not a one-man show, have done a hell of a job bringing in players, bringing players with them from James Madison, bringing in just the right fits, it looks like at running back and a couple of other spots from the transfer portal. You know, it kind of puts all these other programs around the country who haven't quite gotten it done in the transfer portal times on alert that. And their administration alert, hey, you can turn things around in 6 months or 8 months,
Absolutely
right?
right. And I think even more so, and I don't know this to be a fact, but I actually believe, based on following, Indiana recruiting and Coach Cignetti kind of on social media, since, my son is being, actively recruited and, Indiana would be, an amazing place to go.
Yep.
They're really just cranking their NIL too, given the current success.
Yeah.
It wasn't like it was very much a thing that Cignetti brought with him as well. So the fundraising is ongoing and active. They're redeveloping the football facility and everything around football, a lot to do with the winning. They've rewarded Kurt Cignetti with an 8-year extension, making him probably like the, I don't know, fifth, sixth, or seventh highest paid coach in the Big Ten. Using quick math, around $8 million a year.
Yeah.
But you're absolutely right. What it does, it puts other programs that are maybe further along with NIL that have resources, behind the eight ball going, well, why can't we have that same result when we can go out and, hey, say it, buy players? Is this the right guy to lead these players that we bought? And so, as you said, athletic departments and administrators have to evaluate, the leashes some of these coaches that are, hovering around 500 and attempting to become bowl eligible. Is that enough anymore? Because we've seen, I'll call it Division One FBS players, been given an opportunity to come to what a lot of people believe is the first or second best conference in all of football between the SEC and the Big Ten. In this case, it's the Big Ten, and win.
Yeah.
But it's and here it, it's a perfect little storm that I think Kurt Cignetti's kind of created. It's bringing those players. Having hungry players left on that roster that have been the doormat of the Big Ten for so long, that some trust has been put into to be maintained on scholarship. They've put in the work, they've bought into the culture, and that's been married up. And then I believe, what Cignetti and, when I look at the staff, Cignetti and his time with Nick Saban, every time you hear Cignetti talk, he's the son of a coach. He's got experience with Nick Saban. Mike Shanahan was also the offensive coordinator, was also a coach with Nick Saban. So there's a toughness, there's a culture that they brought. They plopped down and said, this is the way that we're going to do things. And they've got those transfers and those carryovers bought in. And a couple other things to talk about Indiana before we move on is like they're super efficient, right?
Yeah.
Having the 1-2 punch at running back, having a 1-2 punch at receiver. You get the transfer portal kid from OU and Rourke, that's been, I don't want to say lights out, but darn near lights out and is being named in, Davey O'Brien and Maxwell Award. And he's probably, fringe Heisman conversation because of the consistency and the one word that when I look at Indiana's offense is efficiency. You know, over 50% third down conversions. They're converting, I think, over 50% on fourth down conversions. So when they take chances, there's trust and there's also they're delivering. That maintains drives, time of possession, allows scoring opportunities when you get into the red zone. Red zone efficiency is also high. So they're rolling. And then you've got the Kamara kid on the defensive line that they've got to block, who so that's the guy that you're gonna see potentially, as we talked about earlier, flashing in the face of Will Howard. Maybe not on the center. But they're going to create opportunities to get after Will Howard. and they're stingy on defense. And lastly, while some might say, the players and the coaches don't control who they play. You line them up, you knock them down. So line up old lady to the poor, knock her down, right? So they can't control the schedule, but they've maintained the zero in the loss column. And for the longest time, they were rolling. It was never, trailing in any game, blowing out everybody by 30 plus points. Then they were down 10, against Michigan State, I believe, on the road. And then they roll off, I think, 40 some odd points and win 45 to 10 or 42 to 10. And then there's the challenge against Michigan, probably their biggest test with what Michigan represents in regards to toughness as the, reigning national champions, spying or no spying. But then to come out and get the stop, and kill the clock the way they did offensively, to allow them to win that football game was a, again, although it wasn't against some like top 10 ranked opponent, which they're going to get in the Buckeyes this week, it was a, a cornerstone validation win for Kurt Zignetti and his crew.
Yeah, they found a way to win.
Yes.
That's when everything was, I mean, when their least productive offensive game of the year, they still found a way to win, just like the 2002 Buckeyes did. Of course, I don't know if they'd have found that way to win if they had Matt Wilhelm playing for them. But you know where I'm going with that.
I do.
But I mean, all that matters in the final analysis it, on Saturday, Ohio State versus the improbable showdown game. With unbeaten fifth-ranked Indiana, all that matters is the W, correct?
It is. It is. It is because then it sets the table for the unfinished business. We didn't think the unfinished business would have anything to do with Indiana football, right?
Yeah,
The
right.
unfinished business comes next week, with the game. The unfinished business is making an appearance in the Big Ten championship game, regardless of the opponent. In this case, you will, if it's us, get to undo what happened in Oregon, on the road. And then it also sets the table for you to enter the tournament. And in some cases, a seat at the table, chip at a chair, is another mindset, is whether we're the 12 or we're the 2 or we're the 5 and we play a game and host it in the Horseshoe, or we get that bye, which, we've talked about all year, is going to be a big deal for Ohio State or for any team, the four teams that get it. It's a big deal to have a bye week, that first week off to rest because of the long season. But you just want that opportunity. And I think that, as I said, Ryan Day and these seniors that have all come back have to undo a lot of wrongs, over the course of their 4 years. And then also they, so Tim, as we talked all year, the unfinished business in air quotes that a lot of these players since reporting to camp, and a lot of them returning to be stay Buckeyes, Ryan Day and, the addition of Chip Kelly and, this staff and these players, it's, there's been a lot of scrutiny, with big games, with winning the game, the lack of an appearance in the Big Ten championship game. And so these guys can, right a lot of wrongs, but this is a massive opportunity against these Indiana Hoosiers with Kurt Zignetti and this crew who, have not lost a game. So to your point, having that W when the clock strikes zero at the end of this football game by any means necessary, and it does not have to be pretty. Even if you fall in a coach's poll or a media poll, surviving an undefeated football team that has played, very well all season is just the task that hopefully we're up to. And I know that the Buckeyes and Coach Day has pled, but Buckeye Nation's got to show up, be loud. It's going to be a little cold, but we've got to make that place an advantage for us at home.
There you go, ladies and gentlemen. That's Matt Wilhelm. And I remind people that Ohio State lost its left tackle, Josh Simmons, in the midst of the game at Oregon, lost Tegra Tshabola for most of the first half or a lot of the first half in the game at Oregon. Still only lost to Oregon 32 to 31. They lost Zen Mikalski, the fellow who replaced Josh Simmons a couple of games later. And still found a way to put an offensive line together to win at Penn State, one of the toughest places to play in the country. The two toughest places to play in the country, maybe Autzen Stadium and Penn State. And you just got a sense they'll find a way this week. And the bottom line, like Matt, like you just said, like you just whoever steps in at center or steps in at guard if Carson Henson moves over. like you said, you're a Buckeye. You're not some neophyte, apprentice, trying to make a high school team or something. I mean, you were brought to Ohio State for a reason. Now it's your chance to step up, right?
Absolutely. And again, I say this to the young men that I'm coaching at St. Ed's, but it's like, when you get deep into the playoffs, it's the reason why you came to St. Ed's is to play in these games. It's not these regular season games. It's these games that matter. You want to be the one out inside the white lines, not standing on the sidelines, just hearing other people, playing this game that you love. And I think that's the culture, when you talk about Ohio State, and I know that I actually watched a recent little social media clip of like the Armstrong twins from St. Ed's just talking about the brotherhood, because they've got pitched the brotherhood, everyone sells the brotherhood, and then you get there and it's actually become just that, the brotherhood of, they're not just your teammates. These are your brothers that you're battling with, that you're fighting with, through the ups and the downs. And again, I do think there's going to be a little bit of a mild somber moment, but it's going to be business as usual. The next guy's going to step up. You're going to go about practice. It might be weird without Seth. Maybe he brought a specific energy or a vibe, out there on the offensive side of the field. Defense probably won't even really be bothered by it. But then you're just
Exactly.
gonna, it's the new normal will set in, and you just pivot and roll. That's just the way the football season goes. It's the way the NFL season goes. And again, I mean, gosh, besides COVID, football doesn't really stop for anything.
No. And as Ryan Day reiterated last week, once you step between the white lines, nobody cares what your problems are on the outside of the white lines. It's all about football. It's all about getting after it. Matt Wilhelm, thanks for joining me again on the Tim May Show, my man.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Tim.
And until next week, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back to talk about the Indiana game and the game. Who knew there'd be two showdown games in a row, possibly three, with Oregon already clinching the spot in the Big Ten championship game. We'll have lots to talk about. But until then, this is Tim May for Matt Wilhelm. We'll see you then. Cut. Appreciate you, brother.
You got it, man. Anytime. You'll marry that up perfectly with your editor, right?
Oh yeah. He'll
Okay, perfect.
do the marrying. I'll just be
Yeah,
there.
well, actually, this is the first time we'll make him work all year.
Yeah, exactly. Amen. All
Appreciate it, buddy. Have a good
right, see
day.
you next week, brother.
You got it.